The good, the bad, the ugly. And we'll take those in order on the show today. Welcome. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Got a busy hour. We're going to talk about tax planning after tax filing. So this is down the road when you look at your taxes and go, what the heck happened? No, you got a better idea because you have been tax planning. Ask Annex is on the way, and also a piece about volatility because it is back. That's all on the way. I'm Danny Clayton, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Welcome.
Thank you.
Dave Sponauer is the President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management.
Thank you, Danny. I know you are old enough to remember The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the movie, the Clint Eastwood movie back in, I think, the 1960s, and what a great actor Lee Van Cleef was. You remember that, his participation in that movie, but that was a long time ago. But I will tell you, there's a lot going on right now. And let's talk about some of the information that came out this week. And, you know, one of the things that we were looking forward to, because we're kind of that way, is this PCE indicator. People are going, what are you talking about? But it's an inflation indicator that the Fed likes to use.
It is. Yeah. The personal consumption expenditures indicator. It's kind of a mouthful, but the Fed, ever since 2012, they have been targeting this particular measure of inflation. A lot of people look at the consumer price index, which is another measure of inflation. That comes out earlier in the month, but the Fed looks at PCE mainly because it's fairly broad-based, and it oftentimes runs a little bit lower than the consumer price index because of some of the design.
Right.
Yeah, it makes it a little easier for them to try to hit their target. So it's kind of nice when they can pick their own target that way. And it came in, thankfully, mostly in line with expectations, which were already kind of elevated.
Earlier, so that was a sign of relief for them.
It really was. But one of the problems is that what we've seen is that in January, inflation, as measured by the PCE and CPI, was pretty hot. And then February, it was also hot, but not quite as bad. And then March, still too high, but it looks like maybe if you kind of play that game of connect the dots, the January, February, and March ones, it might be trending a little bit lower, but there still is no reason for the Fed to try to start cutting rates anytime soon.
Yeah, that's right. And the Treasury yields reacted to that. And of course, one of the things we look at is the economy, and is it growing? Is it not growing? Is it slowing down? Because, of course, it's going to be a major part of the election season.
Yes.
Is how is the economy doing? And that GDP report came in, and it was a bit tepid.
Yeah, tepid is a great way to describe it. 1.6% annualized. So the way that they do it is whatever the quarterly change is, they just kind of multiply it by four, saying, what if that continued for the entire year? 1.6% is almost like treading water, to be honest with you. And the details of it were pretty illuminating. What we saw is a continuation of the trend of consumers driving growth, but that consumer spending is beginning to slow a little bit. There's actually a decline in the volume of purchases of goods, but an increase in services, but even that part has been slowing a little bit
lately.
Yeah,
that's for sure. And of course, you know, another part of this election conversation is going to be who leads the Fed. And of course, Chairman Powell has taken a lot of punches over the years of, you know, the term transitory, which was not transitory. And then you'll remember several years ago, he was actually asking for inflation.
I know. You imagine that he looks at what he has said in the past, and I've done that too, right? You've said something, you're like, man, I really wish I didn't
Everyone
say that.
Everyone's done that.
Yeah. But he was being too specific with the word transitory, saying, let's say 6 months. Well, you know, it's been a lot more than 6 months. It's going on, I think, now like 2 years. And then as far as he said that when we were coming out of COVID that, hey, we would welcome some inflation because we know how to deal with that problem.
Right.
Well, do they really?
Got away, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's switch topics because that is certainly something we're going to continue to converse about. But of course, we are in earnings seasons. A ton of reports came out this week. In fact, I think about 150, is that right?
That's correct.
150 of the S&P 500 reports came out this week, and it was a mixed bag, but in general, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I would say that if it's a scorecard, on balance, it was good. We're about halfway through. About 46% of the S&P 500 companies have reported so far, and within any given sector, so let's say technology or communication services or energy, it's been kind of winners and losers, where if you just take as an example, let's compare Meta, the parent to Facebook, to Alphabet and Microsoft. Meta, you know, they were investing a lot of money in artificial intelligence and begging investors to be patient with them for it to actually pay off.
Right.
Contrast that to Alphabet and Microsoft. They've made the investment and it is already paying off for
right.
them.
And so higher sales, right? Yep. Higher revenues, no matter what your industry is. You like to see the revenue number go up. Some had earnings go up, right?
Yep.
That's the bottom line, and some didn't. But those that had both revenue and earnings beat certainly were rewarded. That is the dynamic duo that we like to talk about. But let's just switch real quick to these consumer stocks that we've been looking at.
Yeah, on the consumer side, one of the messages is that the consumer is resilient, but price sensitive. I think Pepsi, when they announced their earnings, they were talking about the resilience of the consumer. Kimberly-Clark, they reported higher volumes, not just prices. And that's one of the things on our investment committee that we really pay attention to. We want to understand the fundamentals, the valuations, and then the market opportunities for the companies that we invest in. And one of the fundamentals is not just about looking at revenue or earnings, but it's about, is there actually volume behind it? It's not just about price, it's also the quantities. And for a number of these companies, they're saying, yes, the volumes are improving, but that's not across the board. Contrast that with, say, Tesla, electric vehicles, or even with Ford and General Motors. Well, the earnings were good for Ford and General Motors. The volumes that they're looking at for electrical vehicles is actually declining. And so now they have to do some price concessions. So if you don't have the volume growth, it's really hard to sustain any price increases as well.
So let me try to wrap this all up. Give me your best Clint Eastwood, right? The good, of course, was that we had good earnings report and some de-escalation geopolitically. Did I get that right?
That's right.
The bad was we saw some economic numbers, and we even talk about this, but German PMI and some other places starting to slow down, and the outright ugly.
Yes, the outright ugly. I'd say the Treasury auctions have been pretty ugly as far as the amount of debt that's out there, the way that it needs to be financed and absorbed by households and businesses. Some of those auctions, that's why we've seen so much volatility in the yield and bond market.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano, our President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. It's our Week in Review. It's powerful information. It's yours for free, and it's always available on demand at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, also the Axiom newsletter. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, Saturday, April 27th. Still to come, you did the tax prep, you did the filing. Now it's time for tax planning. That's what we do. We'll be right back on 620 WTMJ. Fiduciary advice on your schedule, live radio, podcasts, Annex Wealth Management YouTube channel, plus AnnexWealth.com. You're never going to be far from learning more and about our fee-only fiduciary advice. On this radio show, let's do it again. I'm Danny Clayton. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management, is here. Dave Spano, President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management.
Thank you, Danny. You know, everyone's talking about the election, of course, and just overwhelmed with everything that's happening. And people go, well, what's going to happen in the swing states, and how are the polls looking? But we came up with one of these things, which is a really good indicator of who is going to win. And it's called the Misery Index, and we want to talk about that.
That's right. Yeah. So the Misery Index, that's something that's actually been around for a while, where if you add the inflation rate to the unemployment rate, that is what's called the Misery Index. Because if you kind of think about what do people not like, they don't like high prices, or rather high inflation, and they don't like being unemployed. So you add those two together, and it's a pretty good indicator about how people are feeling. There's a high correlation between that, how people feel, how they spend, and how they vote.
And so we went back to 1960, so 16 elections, and 15 of the 16, this was a good indicator.
It really was. So when the Misery Index has been elevated, it's really who do people blame, right? They usually, right or wrong, they are going to blame the incumbent. And I think that right now, the Misery Index, it is still elevated. Based upon most recent data, it's about 7.3. And the average, as we go back to through the 1960s, is around 9.2. So it has been higher on average, but it is moving the wrong direction for the incumbent. I think it's not just about the level, it's also the rate of change of it.
And of course, we're going to have to watch that, because any sustained rise, of course, in inflation or the unemployment rate starting to tick up is going to make that index go higher. The only time that it didn't work, and it was worth noting, was in October of 1976. And there was a lot of things happening. Of course, Nixon had been exited, if you will, a little bit earlier than that. And there was a transition to Ford at that time. And so one of the things that we wanted to look at is if it didn't work, why didn't it work?
Yes.
But we're right at that number right now. So we're going to pay attention to that as we go forward. And it's, again, you talk about why these things are happening, and people, as you talked about, per capita disposable income, again, not to get too deep, but this is the reason why people feel that pain.
That's right. And so when we see the economic data, it's oftentimes for the economy as a whole. I like looking at it on a per person basis. And so if we look at the real personal income, excluding transfer payments from the government,
right,
it's up 2.3% year on year for the economy as a whole. But if you do that on a per person basis, it's only up 0.9% because we have had population growth. And so that's really, I think, what matters. It's not just how's the overall economy doing, how are individuals doing?
And of course, that population growth you refer to is, of course, immigration, another hot topic, and it's something that we're going to talk about for the next couple of months and kind of give you an indicator of where things are going.
Dave Spanos, our president and CEO, Annex Wealth Management, Brian Jacobson, our chief economist. We got them for the rest of the show. There's a lot more to come. In fact, up next, now the taxes are done, use that data to work on tax planning. We do it for our clients. We can do it for you. Ask Annex is on the way, and so is a chat about volatility, which has reared its head. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? You know, there's filing your taxes and then there's tax planning. One you do mid-April and the other is pretty much a year-round task, or at least it should be. And it's something we do for clients of Annex Wealth Management as part of Comprehensive Wealth Management. Joining me to talk about it is Mark Stry, CFP, enrolled agent with the IRS, and a senior wealth strategist with Annex Private Client. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Danny.
True or false, you have reviewed hundreds and hundreds of tax documents.
Definitely in the hundreds, likely in the thousands.
In your past, I know you played baseball at a D1 level in college. Which is harder, a D1 baseball season or tax season?
It depends on what the weather is. They're both a grind. Certainly enjoyed my time with baseball. Really prepared me for where I am today, having a new passion now, and that's taxes and tax planning.
So you work closely with our clients on tax planning. What is it that we can learn after taxes have been done and filed that'll help us both in financial planning as well as next year's taxes? Because I think a lot of people get it backwards. They think the tax preparation is the thing. The tax planning is the thing.
Tax planning is the most important. And the way I look at it is like a big funnel. At the very highest level, I think that it all starts with what was your initial reaction of last year's outcome? Were there surprises? Did you owe? Did you get money back? Those are all things that are important to consider, because the return that you just completed kind of sets the framework for what we're going to be doing the following year.
So when you're working on tax planning, what are the things that you've got your eye on, and what could influence this year's tax planning that people should be thinking about?
By far the biggest is that we are expected to see a major tax change coming beginning 2026. This means that we have the remainder of 2024 and 2025 to finish up basically any planning that's at the lowest rates we've ever seen. What many people don't realize is that the way the current tax code is structured, most taxpayers as a whole saw a dramatic reduction in the amount of taxes they're paying each year. So knowing that there's a high probability that the tax rates are likely going to increase in the future, I think these next 2 years are really key to try to focus on some meaningful planning.
Is what we do now going to affect 2 years down the road? I'm guessing, yeah.
100%. Huh. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if you look at this year, we're in an election year, so you're going to see some market volatility. And while we never like to see the markets go down, it does create some opportunities for planning.
Mark Stry is Senior Wealth Strategist, CFP at Annex Wealth Management, part of the Annex Private Client Team. So only 2 years left. Strategies you see greatest impact, because these things are going to sunset.
So when designing planning strategies, one of the lenses that I like to look through is how can we save you the most amount of taxes over the remainder of your lifetime and your beneficiary's lifetime? This requires a broad, forward-looking approach, which makes having a financial plan so key. This may mean that we will have to pay more taxes now, so this year and next year, and pay them earlier than what we would otherwise need to. But the one thing that we know we can't avoid is taxes. You're going to pay them during your lifetime, or your beneficiaries are going to pay them, likely at rates that are going to be higher in the future than what they are today. So why not take some proactive steps to see how to minimize them?
What is the reaction when we tell a client that you might need to pay more taxes now to pay less taxes in the future? That's not great news.
There's definitely sticker shock.
Yeah.
But when you are sitting in a conference room and the way we kind of go through the plans and talk through the strategies, you definitely see the numbers that support that. Just looking at, hey, if we make these moves today, you're going to pay X number in taxes, but in the future, you're going to save X, assuming that the rates just go back the way we think they are, which is at the very minimum a sunset.
Your work with Annex Private Client, what types of taxpayers are these? Are these business owners, these highly compensated individuals, all of the above?
Yeah, so we work with a lot of higher net worth families, many people who have done a great job of savings over time. What we tend to see is that because these individuals have been higher income earners, that they have a large accumulation of pre-tax assets. So during those working years, you put away pre-tax, save money during the higher wage years. But now we're at retirement and we're starting to see that you're really not going to save too much in taxes because of required minimum distributions and all of the IRA distributions that you'll have to take out.
And if they own businesses, this is part of their picture as well.
100%. Unless you're going to be in business forever or transfer, give it to your kid. There's going to be a sale at some point, most likely. So, you know, planning around those events are very key.
And if somebody is in the process of maybe thinking about a business plan of succession, do we help with that as well?
We can definitely talk through things to consider. So we don't broker businesses. Really where we work is helping with the decision making around timing and then being able to talk through then what when you have the proceeds and then how do we make that transition into the rest of life.
Mark Stry is a senior wealth strategist at Annex Private Client. He's also a CFP and an enrolled agent with the IRS. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Danny.
Quick reminder, this Tuesday at 4 o'clock, great webinar. Understand your WRS pension potential. This is Wisconsin Pension Program. It's a great one, but there's lots of questions. Details at annexwealth.com. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Time for Ask Annex. Got a question for us? You head to the website, annexwealth.com. Look for the Ask tab. We get back to everybody. Don't have to be a client for that. We would like to engage with everybody. In the studio, Fred Coleman, CFP and a wealth manager. Hey.
Hey, Danny.
And we got Matt Morsey, investment team manager, also a CFP. Hello.
Hey, Danny.
Question number one on Ask Annex today. What advice do you give when one spouse wants to move upon retiring and the other wants to stay? And Matt and I were talking off air. We both could have written this question.
Oh, for sure. It's a conversation we have in my house all the time, and I've got quite a while before retirement.
Yeah.
To us, it's communication and working through, you know, what's important and having something to retire to and what your plan is going to be and get to that spot. Sometimes it's moving within a different area of where you already live. You know, sometimes it's more drastic of living to a different part of the country. You know, for me, I like warm weather and, you know, frankly, I don't really like the Wisconsin winters, although this one was pretty mild. So I'd want to move down south, but my wife's not fully on board with that. So I've got 20 years plus to get her to change her mind. But ultimately, you know, it's communication, I think, between everyone to figure out what those goals are for retirement and what you want to do there.
Question two, are you familiar with Acorns? I'm wondering if I need to push my kids to consider something like this to get them interested in savings. We've got parents all the way around. Fred, we'll start with you.
I love Acorns, and the big reason for that is just because it promotes people to invest, and I'm for anything that does move the bar forward with that, whether it's a, you know, simple app where, you know, you're rounding up your spare change or you're doing it intentionally. And the big thing is with kids, you have the opportunity when they're young to mold them, as when they get older, it's a lot harder to change those habits. So anything you can do to create those habits when it comes to automatic investing, teaching them about the stock market, all those things will pay dividends in the long term.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea. And I think we can tell from, you know, behavioral finance, the things that encourage people to save or encourage people to do the right thing. You know, we think about payroll deductions from a 401k standpoint, the amount of money that's been saved in 401ks or 403bs, because it's automatic. You don't think about it and you don't even see it unless you're looking at your pay stub, is dramatic. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that have been the push over the last few years in that part of the industry. And from out of Washington, as making automatic 401k contributions when you start at a new employer, and then you don't even get to make that choice right away. It's done there. And then you have to make a choice either not to do it or to change it. It's really powerful. Same thing if you think about from a tax standpoint, that your taxes are taken straight out of your paycheck, because the government found that if you had to just write that full check once a year, the odds of them collecting and their ability to collect is much lower than if they did it automatically. Same thing with something like an app like that, that is just pulling that money out. You're not thinking about that extra 10 cents, 25 cents, 50 cents. And it seems so small, but it will add up. And especially if it's getting invested along the way, that's a great way to force savings on yourself, you know, or helping your children get started like that. And it is going to seem really, really small for probably a really long time. But eventually that thing is really going to kick up and it's really going to compound on itself. And it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's the little stuff. So we've got this program with our health insurance. If you go 5,000 steps, you get 75 cents. Mm-hmm. But if you do another 5,000, you get $1.25.
Oh, I love that.
I'm obsessed with getting the $2 every day. Mm-hmm. I'm like obsessed with it. It's Ask Annex. Next question is, I bought a stock that's going down. I'd like to set up a standing sell order so that if it hits a certain low point, sell it. I have the option on stop on quote, trailing stop, money, trailing stop percentage. This is the explanation given, but I still don't understand the difference.
There's a lot of different ways to place trades, and a lot of the terminology and the definitions that are put out there are pretty confusing and pretty technical. Try to simplify these things. Let's just imagine a stock's at $50 a share. A stop on quote would say, or a lot of times it's just referred to as just a plain stop, is that if it falls down to 40, let's say, falls down to a lower number, you're just going to sell. You don't care what price you get for it. You just want to get out. So stock goes from 50 down to 40. You're going to get out probably somewhere around 40, but you don't know for sure. The risk there is if the stock closes at $41 today and bad earnings come out and it opens up at 35 tomorrow, you're probably going to get somewhere around 35, but you're getting out. Now, if you have a minimum that you want to make sure you get, that's where the stop limit comes in, where you could say, okay, my stop is 40. So that's a trigger, but I don't want to get anything lower than 40. So you have to have both a go down to 40, but then at least maintain 40, at least for another trade for you to get out at that point. So in that example where it went down to 35, you'd have to wait for that stock to go back up to 40, then you can get out. So it's saying, I want to get out, but here's the minimum. Trailing stop dollars or trailing stop percentage is basically going to say is, I don't want to track this over time. And if my stock is going up, I want to have my stop follow it up with it. So you could either set a dollar amount difference. So that $10 before your stock went from 50 to 60, it's going to follow the stop up from 40 up to 50. It's going to do it for you. Stop percentage, just I want a percentage gap, and I wanted to follow it by that. So,
did you follow any of that?
I leave that to the investment guys, right? That's why we have a great team to be able to do
that. I would say that is the simplistic explanation of it as well, too.
That's why I'm a client of Annex Wealth Management.
Pictures really do a good job in these types of explanations.
Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager, CFP, thanks.
Thank you.
And we got Fred Coleman, CFP Wealth Manager, thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
That is Ask Annex. Got a question for us? Head to the website. Look for the Ask button. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? Brandon Lehman, Director of Annex Private Client and a Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management, is back. Hey, Brandon.
Danny, how are you?
Good. A couple years ago, markets were pretty choppy. It was volatile. You and I sat down and we talked about investing and planning during times of volatility. And at the time, things were kind of grim. Yeah, 2022, we're looking at you.
That was a year of a lot of things going on, right? You had geopolitical, you had rate raises. There's just so many things. And kind of glad that's behind us. But in reality, we know it happens.
Let's fast forward to now. Things were getting a little bumpy again. I'm first to admit, maybe I got a short memory. I didn't live 2022, but things got rolling pretty good. There was blue sky. Now some darker clouds, some volatility. Maybe we should remind ourselves about the proper mindset when waters get choppy. And it's human nature. Probably what makes us want to buy more stocks, take more risk when prices are up, but less when there's down. Brandon, is it true that investors are really at risk of giving up value through poor timing?
Absolutely, because what happens is investors let their emotions get the best of them. So if you miss just one of the best days in the market for the whole year, let's say you were out and then you got right back in, that can have an impact on the overall return. And that's so short-sighted, right? Because when you start to plan, you're always thinking long-term, right? This retirement window can be 30, 35 years, depending on how long, you know, longevity in your family, it could be even longer. So you have to not think day to day and realize that over the long term, it's going to be okay. And I remember 2020, actually. So we're going back quite a few years now. And we used to say, and Dave said it all the time, this too shall pass. And that's the mentality you have to have when you think about the short-term investing. It's like, this is going to pass. Focus on the plan, what we're trying to do for a long term.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. Investors can make mistakes when they change the portfolio inappropriately. And there's two things in particular. One is changing a portfolio constantly in reaction to market swings. And then those who don't rebalance often enough. That doesn't mean all the time.
Yeah. So there's a happy medium there for the most part. So changing it every month, what good is that going to do? You want to let some of these things run sometimes, but also ignoring it completely, like the buy and hold mentality. Yeah, it can work out. But all of a sudden, if you're one of those that just keeps sliding the statements to the side and doesn't really think about it, well, in reality, maybe it grew way too risky for your comfort zone and you're not realizing those swings. So you want to have a professional team like Annex, right? That where we're, our team is looking at and strategically saying, okay, now because of X, Y, and Z that the investment team and the committee saw on the market, we're going to trim this portion of the portfolio. And we're going to do that because we need to bring the risk back in check, back to reality. Or 2022, well, here are opportunities. And I remember them. I remember when they occurred. You know, there were certain points that year where the investment team is like, hey, we should do this. And everybody's like, really? And we're like, yes. But it was long-term vision that they were using and long-term planning, not just, hey, let's get this today because it's a good deal. It's like, no, this makes sense to purchase now. And sometimes folks forget that this is a long-term game.
This is human nature though, right? I mean, when things are great, everything's great. And then when things get choppy, we get worried.
Oh, absolutely. And I come from, I might age myself here, but you know, I think about what happened in 08, 09 and what it meant as a family that grew up in manufacturing and what that did to the manufacturing. I permanently have that scar on me that, yeah. Oh man, doesn't look good. In reality, I have to always think long-term, like, no, it's going to be okay. And it did pan out. There were bumps, but we made it through it. And we just have to stay focused on the long-term. That's the key.
Brandon Lehman is director of Annex Private Client, also a wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management. Keeping your head when things are volatile. Here's another and something the financial news is full of, getting swept up in market frenzies. And there have been a bunch.
Oh, yes. What is it? The meme stock craze? Yeah. Was that something? Yeah. Everybody starts getting caught up in fear of missing out, right? You don't want to be the one who missed the opportunity. And that's just jumping at whatever the media says. Now, remember, the media, and I'm going to pick on more television media in this side of the world, they're there to give you stories, but also to draw ratings, right? They need to draw ratings. And I'm not saying they're pushing bad ideas, but they're just talking about an idea more and more and more because it draws people in. Well, that's not a reason to chase something. There is no reason to chase anything. Actually, what you're trying to do is build a strategic allocation for a long-term goal. And yes, you might find really good opportunities, but that takes research. That takes understanding of price to books, price to earnings, all these things that are talked about that the investment team does, a bottom-up approach on equities, a manager research selection process. That's how you look at it. It's not just, hey, this name is really good today. We got to go buy it. No, does it really truly make sense long-term? Otherwise, you have what happened in that meme stock portion where it was up, down, up, down. We don't want that. We want long-term growth, looking for solid planning.
The market has cycles. We should not forget that. Keep a proper perspective. Brandon has outlined a number of things, but if we can help on your journey, annexwealth.com, click on that Get Started button. Brandon Lehman, Director of Annex Private Client, Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Danny.
Coming up on Tuesday, 4 o'clock, great webinar if you're in the Wisconsin Retirement System Pension Plan. Understand your WRS pension potential. Details, annexwealth.com. Look for the events tab. Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ. We're back. If you'd like to hear a podcast version of the show, it's going to be live at the top of the hour. Wherever you get your podcasts, we have financial planning at every level. Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, Annex Ignite. We're going to meet you right where you're at. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spanos, our President and CEO.
Yeah, that's a great lead-in, Danny. Of course, you know, we have these three verticals, Annex Ignite, for those who are just getting going, Annex Comprehensive Wealth for most people, and Annex Private Client. And that's where I want to go with this segment. We got a question that came out of a sophisticated investor, and they started to talk about dividends. Yes. And why they're good and what's happening in the market right now. And I thought that would be a great topic today, Brian.
Yeah, it really is. And it's very timely, mainly because if you hadn't noticed, Alphabet, the also known as Google, right? So it's the parent company of that search engine. They announced that they're going to start paying a dividend. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, when you think about a technology company, a company that's in growth mode, they don't necessarily always pay dividends. That used to be one of those indicators of maybe this cash cow kind of a stodgy.
But
no
why
growth.
Don't they? You nailed it when you said they were growth companies, right? They're taking some of that free cash flow and investing it back into the company.
That's right. Exactly. So it's not a bad thing, right? It's just that they believe that they can invest back in the company for growth, grow that faster than what maybe you can earn as far as if you're spending it and investing it in something else.
Right.
Well, so now all of a sudden, these growth companies are beginning to pay these dividends. It's not just Alphabet. Meta, so the parent for Facebook, they last quarter announced that they were going to start paying a dividend. And one of the big reasons is it's not that they don't have growth opportunities in front of them. It's just that they generate so much cash flow that it's probably better than them trying to reinvest it in marginally attractive
right.
projects or maybe wasting it on executive perks, things
right.
like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'll remind you of that later. But of course, you know, what we do want to talk about, of course, is that that is something that's a good indicator. You know, companies have done things before, like buying back their
yes.
shares to increase that as well.
That's correct. And they actually are still doing these share buybacks. It's just that they have different tax implications. And so I think that it actually shows that these companies are growing up. They're trying to really appeal to a broader investor base. There are a lot of people who really like getting the dividends on a periodic basis. You get the income, and it can also have some tax advantages to
right.
it. In today's environment, if you have held that stock for a long enough period of time, it gets taxed at a preferential rate. So instead of having the dividends or interest income is taxed at, say, your income rate, let's say if you're in the top bracket, that's 37.
Let me just interrupt for a second, because there are different rates and there are a certain amount of people at certain income levels who pay 0% on that income, right? And
yep.
in dividend rate. And then as you move up, it moves up to 15 and 20. And then there's this 3.8% kicker on top of that.
That's right.
But it depends on where you get it. And that is substantially different than taking it as income
yep.
because it could be at a much higher rate, maybe 40%. And of course, we read this week that President Biden is talking about a 44% top marginal rate and income tax rate. So it could have substantial benefits.
It can, exactly. And that's one of the things that we always try to do is kind of think through the tax strategizing as far as what kind of income do you want to receive? Is it going to be from a municipal bond, the interest there where it's exempt from federal income taxes? Or is it a CD where it's taxed at the federal and the state level?
Right.
Or when you're looking at, let's say, with your equities, if you are getting the growth of the principal as far as the value, because the company is doing well, the value is going up, and if you can get some dividends from that, you know, that growth over the long term, it might be taxed at, say, 20 or 23.8% because of the Medicare surcharge for people who are in the top bracket.
Right.
And then the dividends could also be taxed at that preferential rate. So
and
the
that's
tax
why, you know,
characteristic matters.
And Brian, and that's why I always say, you know what you own, because sometimes people have come in and said, I saw this other advisor who's trying to sling an annuity at me. And of course, if it's a 5% distribution rate out of an annuity and a 5% dividend out of a stock, you have to know the difference between how you're taxed and what the potentials are.
That's right. And those words that you used are very important. Is it a distribution? Is it a dividend? Is it interest? Is it income? Sometimes people just sort of, you know, gloss over what they're actually talking about there or what's actually meant. But those words really matter, because
right.
the distribution that you get, is it going to be considered ordinary income? In which case, it could be taxed at very high rates. Is it going to be considered capital gains? Is it going to be considered qualified dividend? Is it going to be considered, you know, tax-exempt interest?
So there's two other things that I do want to cover here, and just before the show is over here, and you can reinvest those dividends. So the dividends come out, and sometimes people have invested in what's called these DRIP programs.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, DRIP is a great acronym. I got introduced to these back when my first stock that I bought, it was with Wisconsin Energy. They had a dividend reinvestment plan, a DRIP plan, where the dividends are automatically reinvested. And believe it or not, over the long term, dividends being reinvested can actually make up about 40%, if not more, of your total return on equities over time.
Again, folks, know what you own, why you own it, and how much you're paying for it.
Sounds familiar. Thank you, Dave Spano,
thank
President
you,
and CEO,
Danny.
Annex Wealth Management. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, we got an hour, but just a sample of what we do on behalf of our clients. It would be our honor, it would be our pleasure to serve you as a fee-only fiduciary. Head to the website this weekend, annexwealth.com. Click that Get Started button. Thanks for listening. See you next Saturday at 10. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.